Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is something. Job, you're making some type of signal.
Hey, C C.
ACC, what's that? Well, ACC. Do they play basketball this year? Yes, it is. Right now, it is Monday, March 28th, a little after 9 p.m. Eastern. I just messed something up on my computer. But, Griggs, what the heck are we here for today?
I don't know. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me. Is that good?
Yes.
Wait, hey. Oh, okay. We're back to. Okay.
Okay. I've got no idea what we're doing. We're off to an awful start already, but
Why'd you turn me down?
turn you down. I
Don't
tried to
know.
turn you off, but that didn't work. This is our Sweet 16 recap and our Final Four preview show. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Below me, Joby Fortson. To his side, David Dorman. Over here, making no sense whatsoever next to me, is David Griggs.
I make all kinds of sense. I'm an expert.
I don't know in what, but sure. What we want to do is talk
College
about,
basketball.
obviously, all the games that happened over the past week, take a little look at what's going to happen coming up this weekend in the Final Four, and talk about other stuff going on in college basketball as well, I guess, towards the end of the show. But let's get right to this, I think, here, and let's go ahead and pull up
The AC8 bracket.
The AC8, we unfortunately have a little problems with the AC8. It may have to get canceled again. We've had, our court apparently was a complete mess. They didn't want to play around the debris field that was in. I don't know. We're working on it. Final Four, though, it's coming up. And let's go region by region. Let's start in the West region, I think, here. And Joby, let me start with you here. West region, which started with the upset. I mean, Arkansas knocking off Gonzaga was just a complete shocker. And then Duke just got by Texas Tech and got by Arkansas, and they're in the Final Four.
I mean, K's last year, all the stories everybody has read about it, et cetera, you can fall into it. But what comes down to is it was a, I actually thought, a really well-played game by Arkansas to actually contain Gonzaga, get Holmgren into foul trouble. I mean, he had 0 points in the first half. He immediately got to 11, like in the first like 6 or 7 minutes of the second, but they kept pounding and pounding and pounding. I actually think the third and fifth fouls before he fouled out were very weak, but that doesn't change the fact that Arkansas did exactly what they had planned on doing. Notae actually nailed some shots from outside more than just driving the lane, and Arkansas's defense carried the day. It was two really good teams going at it. Arkansas didn't bring the same thing against Duke. Duke was clearly the better team, and what you saw from Duke in that game was the talent that we always talk about. Oh, they have four first rounders, et cetera. They came to play. Griffin had one of his best games, in my opinion, a Duke uniform. And then Banchero is typical. Roach was controlling the game for from the point, and Williams was just a monster on the inside. Duke was the better team that day, and Duke's weakness over this season has been twofold. They don't play amazing defense, so they can give up easy shots. Arkansas didn't make those shots this game. And the other one is Duke handled what they normally don't. They usually don't handle really tough in-your-face defense. Well, Arkansas gave it to them. And Duke, to their credit, showed that they have grown. This is why you've got to really take a long look at Duke in the Final Four, is because Duke grew enough to where they didn't have that loss that they did, for instance, against Virginia this year, like they did against Miami this year. They didn't have those losses. And Arkansas threw at them exactly what those type of teams did. And Duke this time responded and responded well.
Well, you want to talk about Duke's defense, though. The end of that Texas Tech game, the Duke defense was there, I thought.
Oh, yes.
It absolutely was there. And Dorman, let me ask you also. I mean, this Duke team, we almost like a team that we, despite it being all the stories with Coach K's final season, best team in the ACC, we kind of almost, I felt a lot of people were almost overlooking them towards the end of the season, especially did they even belong on the two line? And here they are, proving that they're in the Final Four.
They're proving it. They deserve it. I thought exactly like you said, they were put down because of that home loss on Coach K's final night to North Carolina. And I thought some of the negative criticism of it wasn't really fair. I thought even at the time, it was too much for the young Duke kids. It was just, I felt the pressure. I think they felt the pressure. We got to win it. Last one for Coach K, and Carolina's coming in. And I feel like since that game, the pressure really has been gone. The pressure is kind of like off their backs. All right, the regular season's over. This whole Coach K, this and that, retirement parties, that's over. Like, they are focused on playing basketball now. Their minds are clear, and they have executed on offense the last two or three games down the stretch, A+.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, David. And now that they've got North Carolina behind them and they don't need to worry about them anymore, they can just focus on playing basketball.
I'll tell you what, let's go straight on down here.
Joby gave a great analysis, but I just wanted to throw out there real quick. I was really impressed with what they did against Texas Tech. That's not an easy team to play against, especially with that stifling defense, and they were able to get production against them. Props to them for that.
And come back early, and come back from an early stumble. That sort of stumble is exactly when I referenced the Miami and Virginia losses. That's exactly what happened there. Heck, that's what happened in North Carolina, in their loss at home, though North Carolina didn't have the similar stifling defense that Texas Tech did. There's more.
And Texas Tech, Texas Tech is old and experienced and good guard play, and the coaching's tremendous. Coach Adams is great. And Duke said, we're taking this game. And they absolutely, I agree, Joby, stifled them in the second half.
I have scrolled down here to the East region, though. I wasn't sure if I want to go here next or go here last, but let's go right here. And Griggs, this was the region where, first of all, the top game there, we saw that North Carolina was impressive against UCLA, and really, then very impressive in the regional final against Purdue, Texas, Kentucky. The St. Peter's Peacocks, who will forever be remembered no matter what happens in the Final Four. This was the story of the tournament. Absolutely unbelievable that they took one more game and knocked off Purdue as well.
Yeah, and it's probably the most improbable thing that's ever happened really in the history of college basketball. It is that hyperbole. And we kind of had what the audience doesn't know is that we have a lot of communication off air as well, via email, via group chats. And Chad was getting annoyed at how I kept pointing out how St. Peter's was never ranked and under the radar. They were never a team that we thought would win the Metro Atlantic. And that, they lost to Canisius and Fairfield. Who else beat?
They lost to Ryder. They lost to Ryder.
Swept by Siena. Swept.
We thought we were going to lose to Siena. So, naturally, I just started sending him the same text about four or five times every day.
And I just so wanted to go both Juwan Howard and Will Smith.
Yeah.
Not you. it's now a Smith and a Howard, but go ahead.
Yeah. But the point that I've made to Chad about 27 times, and I'll make again here, is that this was just ridiculous. This was a team that if we were filling out a Metro Atlantic bracket, I would have had losing to Siena in the semifinals, which I would have been wrong about that too, because Siena didn't even make the semifinals. I think they won 17 games, which is okay, but not a lot heading into the Metro Atlantic tournament. There was no indication at all, even by under the radar standards, that this was a team that was even remotely capable of doing what they did. None.
But Joby, they run finally came to an end with the North Carolina Tar Heels, a team that we spent most of the season saying did not even belong in the tournament until they went and won at Duke. And here they are sitting in the Final Four at Hubert Davis. Was he the right hire? Maybe he wasn't the right hire. It looks like the right hire to me.
Well, what's interesting is, all right, so they only play five players. That's what's crazy is. I mean, and Villanova, who we'll talk about later, is in a similar boat, especially now, unfortunately. But they only play five people. At every game, a new MVP, whether it's Love, followed by Smith, and Armando Bacot. Wow. I mean, 20 points, 20 plus rebounds. and a lot of them on the offensive set. Yes, they he had a huge advantage in height and muscle against St. Peter's. An advantage, by the way, that you thought Purdue, with their two outstanding big men in Williams and Edie, would be able to take advantage of.
They completely misused their big men in that game. I was sitting there saying, every time they got to the big men, Purdue was scoring, they stopped doing it. It made no sense.
Edie missed so many bunnies. It was remarkable. It's like, what are you doing? They needed Edie just to sit down because he couldn't make a one-footer. Williams could, and they kept on bringing Edie back in. He'd miss another bunny. It was just crazy. But, well, and what's irritating from my end is in my bracket, I actually have 3 of 4, but Purdue, champion. My champion's gone. Right. I was maybe the only person on earth actually rooting for Purdue outside of West Lafayette. But the but St. Peter's earned it, and they didn't miss free throws. It was awesome to see the consistency from the line, because once St. Peter's got the lead, and we'll talk about this once again with Villanova on the other side, you don't want to let that team have a lead, because over and over again, Purdue would actually take like a 2 or 4 point lead. But then finally, when St. Peter's broke through, they wouldn't relinquish it, to their credit, and they just kept it and kept it. And then guard play took over, and that's where St. Peter's clearly had the advantage. Give Smith and Love credit from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. The big men get the credit because Baycott was in, gave the game of his career, you could argue. And Manic has continued to produce close to 20 points a game. So, but it might have been Love and Smith didn't get out-dueled. As a matter of fact, that 20-point final in the regional final, in the Elite Eight, is misleading, because North Carolina was up by close to 30 most of the second half of that game.
Right. And Joby, I just got to say, no one was more critical of North Carolina, I don't think, on our panel than I was all season long. And I was one of the ones that didn't think they should be selected until very late in the year when I think they had the win against Wake Forest and then, of course, the win against Duke. But Hubert Davis, St. Peter's is a little bit unusual. They have a four-guard offense. I mean, it isn't anything that is completely out of the blue, but it is a little bit different. And while North Carolina had superior talent, I honestly thought when you looked at how they played, they took things away from St. Peter's that had been there in the previous three games. And in such a short turnaround, that was a really good bench coaching job by Hubert Davis. They had no transition points. They guarded the circle, and that's on the defensive end. And on the offensive end, like you said, they just gave it to the bigs and gave it to the bigs and gave it to the bigs. And for the first time ever, put together an actual game plan on how to beat them and did it handily.
And they took it seriously, as Baycott himself in interviews afterwards said, we watched a lot of film on St. Peter's, a lot of film. Mo, I guarantee you, even though Purdue had basically a week to prepare, they didn't watch the same amount.
They didn't.
They clearly didn't. And the last thing I'll say about Davis is one of the reasons North Carolina, and one of the reasons you were skeptical of him, is because North Carolina got out of the gates and stumbled out of the gates this season, except for the win against Michigan. They didn't really have much out of conference to crow about. They would play good teams, but they'd lose to them. And they'd lose to good, as it turns out, good ACC teams. Davis basically said, it's that five-man lineup. I'm going to stop trying to make everybody happy. He actually said this. I'm going to stop trying to make everybody happy. And he said, this is my team. It's kind of the famous line from Hoosiers. My team is on the floor. that's essentially what happened. And when he stopped creating the rotation and putting the value in someone like Manic, for instance, all of a sudden now you've seen the results. And they, as they've already beaten Duke once, they are going to give Duke everything they can handle in that semifinal.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute here, but I want to scroll over to the Midwest. Dorman, let me bring you back in
just
here.
Real quick, I got to say this to Joby. Going back to the round of 64, ACC champion Virginia Tech, not even getting past the round of 64, a testament to that the ACC has just been underperforming all year long.
Let's keep going here. Dorman, in the Midwest, we only saw one game that was close, and honestly it was the Kansas-Providence game that I really didn't watch much of because it was going on at the same time as that Purdue St. Peter's game. But KU even got to a big lead. Providence came storming back all the way to tie it, but Kansas found a way to win there and then rolled Miami, who had just rolled Iowa State.
Yes, Kansas got out to a nice little lead against Providence in the round of 16, but Providence was ice cold in the first half and just couldn't buy a basket. The second half, they extended the pressure and they started to hit some jumpers. I think they just gave so much energy and effort getting back into the game. Down the stretch, they looked tired. They looked like they didn't have their legs. And Kansas hit a big few shots down the stretch in the last 2 minutes. And Providence really had nothing to counter with. If Providence would have hit some jumpers in the first half, they probably would have been much better off, obviously, in the second half with a chance to beat Kansas. And then Miami.
It was kind of funny that, you know, Kansas was so good in the first half against Providence. It was kind of very even in the second half, if not down. Exact opposite of the Miami game, where Kansas was garbage that first half and had one of the best second halves they've played in a very long time.
Dominant. That second half was dominant. I don't think Miami scored yet. They jumped out. They jumped on them right out of the gates at halftime. Miami had no answer for anything. Larrañaga kept calling timeouts, trying to switch stuff up. More from DePaul and the guard play, which had been so good for Miami all season long in the tournament, was just nowhere to be found. Early foul trouble on Moore. He had two and then a quick third in the second half. But they really didn't have any inside play either to stop the Kansas bigs. And Kansas rolled to the Final Four.
And they knew it going in. That was the weakness of Miami, is that, I do believe guard play is so essential. And Miami has it in March. But I do think you need at least some semblance of balance. We just got talking about both the guards for North Carolina and the bigs. Miami, at the end of the day, didn't have that. Kansas did. And Kansas is a very worthy champion of the Midwest region.
Miami, I think, just part of it was they just went as far as they could go. And eventually you're going to run into a team that's better than you are, and that they did. They could have played Kansas 10 times and maybe beaten them once, maybe. But an incredible season. I think that they were kind of undervalued all year. Jim Larrañaga has done a fantastic job at this program. They weren't exactly a basketball hotbed or pedigree, and he's taken them to places that as a program they've never really been at before. And it's
they've never been in the Elite Eight before. This was a first for the program.
Never. It's the second team he's taken to the Elite Eight, and the other one being George Mason. He's the only coach at either school to take them to an Elite Eight. Jim Larrañaga, I think, is a little bit undervalued for everything he's done in college basketball. He is phenomenal.
Well, he's the third most talented. People forget. Everybody thinks Miami, oh, you get all these hot athletes and all this stuff. No, their talent level is third among those three Florida schools. Traditionally, Florida State gets Leonard Hamilton, usually has a better recruiting class, and Florida gets very much a national brand type recruiting class very often. Larrañaga loses, I would argue, Isaiah Wong was probably his best returning, but the second best return player, he nailed some key free throws to beat Gonzaga in Arkansas. So, and he didn't even get to have one.
I can't believe the disrespect I'm hearing from you, Joby, for Reggie Theus's Bethune-Cookman team. I really...
I don't think you disrespected Bethune-Cookman.
it was FAMU that I didn't go for, I guess.
Okay. Let's jump over to the South region here. And Joby, let me start with you here, where we saw Arizona. Dorman, I know you don't want to talk about it, so I'll talk to Joby about it. Arizona, really, Houston, very impressive against them, but Villanova even more impressive in both their wins over Michigan and Houston.
Houston throughout this tournament, whether it was the Illinois game, whether it was even the UAB game. I mean, because a lot of people picked UA.
I did.
It's going to be a ton of
12
upsets.
Yeah.
If you told me there were 3-12 over 5 upsets, I was like, well, UAB Houston's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
No. Houston's stifling defense, showing what they do in March, what Kelvin Sampson, this is no fluke. It's what he does. And they did there. Now, Arizona, I think, laid a bit of an egg. I think Dorman would be the first to admit that. In this, you know, it was a little bit on the Arizona side, but give Houston a ton of credit for a game plan. And it's like Arizona hadn't seen this style and that length of defense all year, which is, you know, I mean, maybe USC doesn't play. USC certainly has the length, but maybe they don't play with the intensity of Houston. Yeah, it was really odd. But then you get to Villanova and wow, Villanova, you know, that Houston kept coming back, but Villanova answered the bell and was something that you don't think of for Villanova.
Wait, Joby, it's very easy to come back when this when the score is 20-15 and it feels like a blowout. So come on.
But it was interesting. It was a slugfest, but you don't think of Villanova and defense. You think of Villanova, once again, it's like what I said with St. Peter's. Once Villanova got that lead, you know, and it becomes a little bit of a foul contest. It's like, yeah. At one point, what Villanova was, I think, 12 of 12 from the line, and the announcers jinxed the hell out of Gillespie in this one, and then he went on to nail like 5 more straight. I mean, it's like, I mean, it was, I mean, you don't want to fall behind this Villanova team in the closing stages. That's what happened. I tip my hat to Houston because I did not see them making the Elite Eight, and they most certainly deserve that spot.
Yeah,
I'm going to jump on Joby's point. Is exactly Joby said it. No one plays defense and brings such intensity to every single possession like Houston does. They play defense like it's the last 20 seconds of every game, and they must come up with a stop and a defensive board. And if you don't match that intensity and that passion to get a stop every single time down the court, they took over Illinois because they just have such a relentless deep. They did the same thing with UAB and then the same thing with Arizona. I agree Arizona laid quite a little bit of an egg, but Houston overwhelmed all three of those teams they played against. And the other teams just couldn't get in their offense and they couldn't get good shots because Houston's defense was so great.
But the other big story out of this region, though, is Villanova, even though they're in the Final Four, they don't play a very deep roster to begin with. No. And Griggs, Justin Moore is done, Achilles tendon tear late in that game. And that's going to be really, really make this rough going up against Kansas, especially now.
I think it is. And honestly, I just think that they're a little bit over their heads in that Kansas game. Kansas, pretty tough to beat to begin with, but like without such a key player. Now, I mean, Villanova as a defensive team, especially in this tournament, has been outstanding. It certainly isn't out of the question that they can win the game, but if you want to talk about a massive, massive disadvantage being down such a key player to a team that's so good and so talented, and that's just really kind of brought it every night in the tournament. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, but then we do have our Final Four set here. It's Villanova, Kansas in one game. That's the early game on Saturday, the late game. Of course, it's Duke versus North Carolina. And before we actually go to our previews of them, I got to spend one moment here to give a very fond farewell to something we've been doing here at Hoops HD for many, many years. It is our rivalry checker. Duke and North Carolina, as of right now, are still 8 miles apart and have still never made the NCAA tournament. We're just a few days away from this no longer being true. So goodbye, rivalry checker. You were great while you lasted. It's over. It's a very, very sad moment here at Hoops HD.
Yes.
Let's take a look at the actual Final Four. And I want to ask each of you what you think about of these two semifinals and the championship game. Who's going to win it? Dorman, why don't I start with you?
Villanova, Kansas. Justin Moore is so much more. Everyone today keeps hearing, second leading scorer. He's just the heart and the soul, and he's so good on defense, and he guards their best offensive player on the perimeter usually every game. And the difference between him and Chris Archidiakono is enormous. And I'm not here to knock Archidiakono. He plays tough. He's a good kid. But Villanova, that is such a tough, tough loss. Justin Moore just gets in your face and grinds you for 40 minutes, and he just does everything, all the little things that don't show up in the stats. That's Justin Moore. That is a devastating loss. Because of that, I'm going to pick Kansas in that first semifinal game from the Superdome. In the next game, I think I think the pressure goes now back to North Carolina, because now North Carolina is on this big stage. They probably didn't really think they were going to be here. They thought they would try, obviously, but now they're here. Now there's more pressure because everyone's looking. And like I said earlier, I kind of think in a weird way, after this regular season of Coach K's farewell, the pressure's off Duke, and they're just playing basketball now. They're not going to be intimidated, obviously, with North Carolina and what they bring up front. They're going to have to match it. But like Joby said earlier, the big Mark Williams on Duke, the big man in the middle, is playing what I think is his best ball of the year. He is going to have to show up, because North Carolina's bigs, as we just mentioned, have been phenomenal in this tournament. I see Duke getting by, and then I see Duke getting over Kansas, and Coach K's farewell tour is over, and they go out champions.
Joby, as an ACC guy that is not a Duke guy, I know that's painful for you to hear, but do you agree with me?
Well, all right, let's start with the first game. I think that there will be a rally around the injury situation. You see teams do it at least for one game. You see that. I think you'll see that with Villanova. I think Villanova is going to come out, and I think Villanova will have the lead at halftime. But then reality will set in, and Kansas will wear them down, probably win the game. But here's the point. If Villanova, as I said before, is able to get those fouls and have a lead under three, Villanova is going to be able to hang on. I think the lead will flip around the 10-minute to go mark. But, I give Villanova a puncher's chance, in this one, but I'll go with Kansas. In the Duke-North Carolina game, the key that I saw was, we'll see if he continues it. Duke, as pointed out by Dorman, Duke needs to match the intensity. I think North Carolina is going to bring the intensity on D, et cetera, all the way through. And Duke, Williams, and others have to bring, I think Roach will, but the others have to bring the intensity the whole way through. I think they will. And the key will be is Griffin is making outside shots that he missed earlier in the year. And I think he'll make enough to where Duke will be able to get past and have a good game. Cable has a whole week to put a good game plan together. I think he will. And K will advance past North Carolina in what will be a classic great game. And then remember, riddle me this. Who did Duke beat to win K's first national title?
Roy Williams in Kansas.
Roy Williams in Kansas. So he gets Roy Williams' successor.
And Kansas.
Followed by Kansas. Storybook bookend. Oh, yeah, I know. This is, one that you throw up at, but that's where I'm going.
Well, Griggs, before I go to you, we do have to remember here now, this is an even numbered year. Villanova won the national championship in 16, won the national championship in 18. 2020, there was no tournament. It's 22. Villanova should be winning it. They would have won it in 20 if we'd played it, of course, because they're Villanova. But they're Griggs, where are you going with this, with the Final Four?
I can kind of see, Joby had a good point about rallying around the energy or around the injury. And there is sort of a next man up, because it is going to be an opportunity for someone else on a big stage that otherwise wouldn't have gotten it. But I just think that Kansas is tough to beat, even if they were at full strength. I'd probably pick Nova to win that game if they were, but it's not going to be easy. And to me, that's just kind of the deal breaker for what you had said. As far as Duke and North Carolina, I know that I have to pick someone. My answer is that I just don't know. I've been more impressed with North Carolina in the tournament than I have been with Duke, but I've been really impressed with both of them. It's the third time they've played this year. It's a unique situation where there's a Final Four game where the two teams know each other, not just well, but as well as two teams could possibly know each other. We've seen rivals play in the tournament before. We've seen Louisville and Kentucky play. But it rarely happens because of the bracketing rules. You just don't get conference matchups, much less conference rivals of this caliber. And it's just kind of hard to pick because I think you're going to see some intangibles come into play here. Is it the pressure of being at the Final Four, or is it negated by the fact that you're sort of in a familiar situation with the opponent, or does the rivalry make it even more intense? I don't really know what to expect here. I know who won the last time they played. It was
well, you have to pick a team, pick a game.
I'm going to pick North Carolina just because I just don't think life is a movie. You can't have Coach Krzyzewski winning in his final year and beating North Carolina and Kansas to do it. That life isn't a movie. So based on that, I'm picking North Carolina and then Kansas
to win it all.
Yeah.
I'm going to go kind of with Joby and Dorman in that I do see Kansas and Duke winning winning here. I think Duke is a better team than North Carolina, flat out. I think this is where North Carolina's run ends. Duke will be able to expose North Carolina's lack of depth, and same problem now with Villanova against Kansas, the lack of depth. But I'm going to take Rock Chalk to win it all. I think Kansas beats Duke in that championship game, sends K out with a game of the national championship, but that's good enough for Kay. I think he's won enough. Let somebody else win one. On that note, Lizzo, let's go ahead and pull this down here. A few other notes I want to discuss. Let me get this set up here. The couple of tournaments going on. First of all, as we record this, the Classic Four, which is the Final Four of the Basketball Classic, is being played. Coastal Carolina and South Alabama in overtime in this first semifinal. Southern Utah and Fresno State come to the late one. Griggs, you go ahead and tell us what's going to happen in these last three games here in the Basketball Classic.
I kind of like Fresno State out of those four, but I haven't. Sorry.
The answer is nobody cares.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, nobody cares. It's the Basketball Classic.
Our good friend John Slika not with us. His Xavier Musketeers, though, tomorrow night going and playing one of the NIT semifinals against the Bonnies, Washington State against Texas A&M, and the other. That's a slightly more interesting game, Dorman, at least.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited, actually. I'll be watching those. I'll be tuned in. Early in the season, I said to watch out for Wazoo in the pack. I thought they would make a run towards the tournament. They got off to an awful start, but have played better the last 2 months. And I'll go with the Wazoo from the Palouse to win two games in New York.
I was looking at Texas A&M. I think that they're just so upset they weren't in the tournament that they've shown in this event that they're just pissed off and going to start winning. But
I agree. I mean, teams react one of two ways in that situation. Either A&M was going to lose in the first round or just lay a stinker in this tournament, or say forget you and just use it as fuel. And I agree. I think they've used it, the way they've performed to date, I think they're using it as fuel.
And one other champion was decided last week, Griggs. The CBI was played. UNC Wilmington. Couple comebacks again.
Making home some hardware.
It's kind of what they did all season, though. This team was supposed to be down to the bottom of the Colonial. They found a way to really win games late, and they kind of did in the CBI. And overtime. So, I mean, congrats to them. I thought it was real nice and real impressive, and just a good way to finish what was a very exciting season for Wilmington, actually.
Yeah, and you want to make the NCAA tournament. That's what everybody wants to do. But you got to spend a week in Daytona, and you're taking home some hardware. That doesn't suck.
A couple other things. The Women's Final Four is in the process of being set. That'll be played this weekend. Also coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the College 3-on-3 competition is back again. Big Ten and the Big Ten MAC combo team won last year. See if they can defend that title. Big Ten has actually won two out of four times that this event's been played. So it's Big Ten's kind of been power. It's actually kind of a fun event to watch.
Yeah, it is. Our colleague Rocco Miller going to be in New Orleans. Are any of you guys going? I'm almost assuredly not. I'm locked in the bunker.
Well, you don't get out of the bunker until we have a national champion, which may happen next Monday night.
Yeah.
I guess, though, that let me go through any other final thoughts from each of you. And Dorman, let me start with you.
It's just been a great season, and it's just great to get back to having fans in the buildings and the passion and the love and the noise that comes with these college basketball gyms and arenas and barns across the country. And then we got to the tournament, and we got to go back to our sites all around the country in the East and the Midwest and the West, and to celebrate college basketball again in March the way we know how. And it was great to get back to that normal and see everyone doing what they love and backing their teams and their fans. So it was a great year. I was the new guy. Hoops HD, you guys have been absolutely awesome to me. I've had a thrill of a lifetime. You guys are awesome. You guys know the game inside and out. And it's been a pleasure to get to work with you guys. Great season. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, what we don't know, we just make up. So,
yeah. And in October, we'll be doing it again. We don't go completely away, David. We do a couple things in the offseason.
We've got another podcast also coming up next week, next Tuesday. And we'll do a season wrap up as well. Hopefully you could join us, Dorman. But Joby, your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, you knew I was going to at least go here. All right. So ACC at large teams, 13-2. Of that 13-2, 11-2 against Power Five plus Big East conferences. So it's not like they were beaten up on, you know, on Sisters of the Poor. Oh, one of those two was Duke over Fullerton. The other was North Carolina over St. Peter's to get to the Final Four. So, so that you can't really slough off that, you know, even one of those two. So the ACC wildly, you know, they got screwed, underrated, blah, blah, blah. No, the JNG actually does update itself as it goes on and says, oh, as you know, it's mathematical. And it's tied to that. Okay, if the results from the NCAA tournament and the NIT and the other tournaments were actually part of the regular season, where would teams be seated? And you would see, for instance, Kansas would probably be the number one overall seed with what they've done, as opposed to just a one seed. Villanova, the JNG says, would crack the one seed. But Duke would still be a two. You know, so it's not like Miami moves up two seed lines. That's great. But, you know, Virginia Tech's still stuck on an 11. You know, the one team, North Carolina, does move from an 8 to a 5. And if they beat Duke, they're definitely a 4 or a 3. You know, but just because, let's not get too enamored. Let's not get carried away. You know, because of a couple of weeks, don't ignore them. They definitely have an impact. Yes, some ACC teams probably should have been a seed or two higher. But let's not say the whole conference, including my friends' Virginia Cavaliers, had no business being in the NCAA tournament. let's not get crazy. You know, let's acknowledge it for what it is and tip our hats to those teams who have performed above their expectations.
Yes, and we could also tip our hats to those conferences that perform below their expectations, SEC, yes. Big Ten.
Joby's Mountain West. Joby loves the Mountain West.
Oh, my God. Joby and I are the same thing here. We're never picking a Mountain West team to ever win a game again in the NCAA tournament.
Well, unless it's San Jose State, because
And I will also be picking Villanova to win in the 2024. I don't know about 23, but 24, Villanova is my champion. Greg, you want to finish us up here?
Yeah, it's just where to go with this. Like before the tournament started, we talked to Tom Burnett and he had made the comment. I don't know if he even said it on the air or if it was after we were done, that with the tournament being back at the sites, that he hoped it was a big event post COVID. I think it has been. And then some. I think that this year's tournament, it was fortunate that we got to have it at all, but this particular year, I think it was something that not just college basketball fans, but everybody across the country was ready for. Is a much needed diversion. There was a time around Christmas in particular to where it was getting so frustrating that you were wondering if we were going to be able to finish the year, because every morning you woke up and you weren't sure who was playing and who wasn't. So I'm just glad that finally finally, for the first time really in 3 years, the tournament feels the way the tournament is supposed to feel. That's my biggest final.
And I couldn't echo that more. It was great to see the tournament, and it really felt normal, and we need some normalcy in the world right now, because away from the sports, it is nothing is normal still. And it has been for a few years and other things going on. But I guess on that note, we will be back, like I said, probably next Tuesday night with a 2022 season wrap-up show. Talk about who the champion was, talk about what happened in the Final Four, talk about, you know, maybe can we get the AC8 in or not? I don't know what else. But on behalf of David Griggs, Joby Fordson, David Dorman, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again next week.